currently listening to Belief with the tune Luther from Belief. Before this, we heard Third Attempt with Images, the Radar Bruin remix. I'm DJ Firefly. You've been listening to Couch Dancing on WRCT Pittsburgh. Feel free to check out my website at djfirefly.com.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
Well, welcome everybody. The honeymoon is over and there is trouble in paradise. Donald Trump apparently already hates his new criminal lawyer and is reportedly furious with him, wondering aloud, why am I paying so much for this legal defense? This is, of course, relating to Trump's first of four criminal trials. This is all about Todd Blanche, Trump's criminal defense attorney. The New York Times has a very good article on this from a couple days ago. Trump venting about lawyer in his criminal trial seeks more aggression. Todd Blanche upended his career to represent Trump and has been the former president's favorite. But Mr. Trump has made him a focus of his episodic rash. We'll link to the article, but the number of things that Trump is displeased with is growing very quickly. Number one, behind closed doors and in phone calls, Trump is regularly complaining about Todd Blanche, according to four different people familiar with the situation. Trump isn't happy that Blanche isn't following his instructions for how he wants him to behave in court. He's not being aggressive enough. Trump wants his lawyer to attack witnesses. Trump wants his lawyer to attack the supposedly hostile jury pool. Trump wants his lawyer to attack the judge, Juan Merchan. And Trump has been wondering aloud, why do my lawyers cost so much money? And, you know, Blanche is accommodating some of these desires. Blanche has been, for example, in his opening statement, talking about how Trump built a very large and successful company. That's language straight out of Donald Trump's playbook right there. That is vocabulary right out of Donald Trump's regular refrain. Very big and successful company, and they went after me. And what's that other thing he always says?
I did everything right and they indicted me.
Exactly. So listen, Trump has a history of not paying lawyers. Hopefully Blanche, for his sake, not that it makes much of a difference to me personally, but for his sake, hopefully Blanche got some money up front. Trump has a long history of believing he knows more than every expert. Trump knows more than scientists. He knows more than epidemiologists and doctors and pulmonologists and immunologists and vaccine researchers. And he certainly knows more than generals, and he certainly knows more than lawyers, according to what he believes. And this is something that his lawyers have regularly, former lawyers have expressed as difficult with Trump. He tells you how he thinks you should be running the case. And sometimes the lawyers actually do know more. So what it is, this destined to implode before the end of this first criminal trial? I don't know. You would think that people will be able to get to Trump and say, listen, in the middle of a criminal trial at this level, firing your lawyer doesn't seem like the best idea. Unclear to me. But the reporting from The New York Times is Trump isn't pleased. He's not pleased. And, you know, sometimes you have a good lawyer, but the facts aren't on your side. And in those cases, usually the lawyers will argue process rather than facts. I don't think the facts are on Trump's side here. I think it's abundantly clear that Trump did the thing that he is accused of, whatever other arguments he wants to make in his defense. So we'll see where it shakes out. We'll see if we end up towards an appeal, if there is indeed a conviction. But Trump increasingly displeased with Todd Blanche. I don't envy Blanche. I mean, OK, I'm sure he's charging a bunch of money and maybe he's getting paid for some of it and he's sort of in the public eye. But dealing with Trump, trying to keep Trump awake. I mean, look at the it's almost like a babysitting gig. They're trying to keep Trump awake by giving him papers to shuffle through and it's not working. He's sleeping anyway. I don't envy the guy. That's for sure. Donald Trump did hold some rallies on Wednesday, even though for weeks he's been saying, I'm busy in court when I should be campaigning. Then when he was off on Wednesdays, he would play golf. Well, this Wednesday, he actually did some rallies. Yesterday, we talked about the rally in Waukesha, Wisconsin. I do want to briefly discuss the rally that Trump did in Freeland, Michigan. He did both of these rallies on the same day. And again, you used to, even Republicans used to always say, no, the country is always great and we hope it does great no matter who's president. Trump opened his rally in Freeland, seemingly daydreaming, waxing poetic about the economy plunging before November. He seems to be rooting for an economic collapse because he perceives it would be good for him.
Last week, we saw numbers showing clearly that the economy is crashing with GDP growing and plunging and all over the place. Nobody knows what's happening, especially Biden.
Right.
But GDP growth was plunging by more than 50% in the first quarter this year. Nobody's seen anything like that for a long time.
We now By the way, GDP is fine. Look at the numbers yourself. It's completely fine.
Thing called stagflation. Does anyone know what that means? It's not good. It's worse than deflation and it's worse than inflation. Stagflation is the worst, and that's what we're in right now.
Yeah. None of these things seem to be true, but Trump seemingly welcoming an economic collapse if it'll help him get elected. Remember, abortion. Sure or not, ban it, monitor women's pregnancies, imprison women, as long as you vote for me. I don't care what you do at the state level. Trump attempting to say the country is in big trouble and instead glitching. And it says he says it's in big, big, dangerous trouble. That's big, big, dangerous trouble.
Our country must be saved. Our country is in big, big, very dangerous trouble.
Big, big, very dangerous trouble. Trump continuing to repeat the lie that everybody wanted Roe v. Wade overturned. Take that to the polls, if you believe it. Trump saying Democrats wanted Roe v. Wade overturned. Liberals wanted Roe v. Wade overturned. Legal scholars wanted Roe v. Wade overturned.
Everybody wanted this to be done. Every legal scholar wanted this to be done. Most Democrats wanted it. Liberals wanted it. This was a while ago. Then they changed their mind. They viewed it as a political deal.
Completely untrue. What we have seen is a consistent and steady increase in the percentage of Americans who believe abortion should be legal in most cases. It's been a steady increase. I don't know what Trump is referring to. And then lastly, continuing, I mean, listen, if this is what you want to run on, if you want to run on everybody hated Roe v. Wade and controlling women and eliminating medical freedom and medical privacy, if that's really what you think is going to win for you in November, run on it. And it seems maybe Trump is doing that. Here is Trump pushing these disgusting, grotesque claims about, you know, post-birth abortions and all of this nonsense we've long debunked many times.
Different. Remember, from the standpoint of what's happening, nobody wants to see abortion in the eighth month or the ninth month, or nobody wants to see execution after birth. You have a situation where Democrats, in many cases, will allow it, execution after birth.
This is completely untrue. That would be called murder. It's not happening. It's a grotesque, misogynistic and disgusting lie about what is going on.
The seventh, eighth, ninth month and after birth execution. And if you remember, the governor of Virginia said it. He said, I sit. We talk with the mother along with the doctor. She has the baby. We put the baby aside and we decide what to do with the baby, meaning do we execute the baby? This is called radical politics. This is something they are far more radical. But it's not even a question of that. It's a question that we have to take care of the situation. Getting it back to the states was something that was very important to everyone. We had to take the radicalism out from the Democrats because when you can do execution or killing at a point in the life cycle, it just can't be allowed, or we're not going to allow it.
And fortunately, it's not allowed. It's against the law. It's against the law in every state, and it's against the law federally to commit murder. That we know, it has nothing whatsoever to do with abortion. And remember, they talk about late-term abortion and all of these things. Those situations are exceedingly rare. And they love to bring up this straw man scenario. I saw it the other day. Hey, let's imagine the due date is tomorrow, full term 40 weeks, due date is tomorrow. Should a mom be able to show up? Baby's healthy, mom is healthy. Senator John Kennedy did this. Should you be able to show up the day before your due date and say, hey, you know what? I just don't want the baby. Please do an abortion. And there is a big difference between saying, listen, we're simply not involving the government in that. That is a very different statement than finding OBs that would actually do that. And when you talk to the OBs, they all say that doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. In those situations, you're talking about extenuating circumstances where there is an inevitable stillbirth or life of the mother at risk. The idea that abortion is an issue about a woman showing up the day before the due date and saying, you know, everything's fine. I'm fine. The baby's fine. I just don't want the baby. Please do an abortion. Ask the OBs rather than the Republican politicians. Does that happen? And they tell you, doesn't happen. Not a good excuse for politicians in Washington regulating medicine, medical privacy, and women's bodies. So Trump continuing to lie, continuing to glitch. The crowds don't seem that into it. The crowds don't seem that into it. And so we'll have to keep an eye on whether these rallies are even good for Trump. It's not obvious to me that these rallies really help Trump find even a single new voter at this point in time. Let me know what you think. Make sure you're subscribed on YouTube at youtube.com/The David Pakman Show. We'll hear from a sponsor or two, and then the Friday show will continue. Let's go to the absolute most important people in our ecosystem. It's the viewers and the listeners, as I am wont to do on the Friday show. We do these calls via Discord. You can find our Discord for free at davidpakman.com/discord. Let's start with Andy in Berkeley, California. Andy in Berkeley, we pray to the gods of technical issues and hope that we start strong. Go ahead.
Hi, David. Thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure.
So I've got a question about, you know, obviously with the Democratic convention in Chicago and all the student protests that are going on, people are drawing parallels to 68. I wouldn't be concerned about something like 68 happening this year, but the media talking about it kind of almost, I'm afraid it might make it real. And then secondly, they're talking about outside influencers. And I think the police said that there were anarchists on the campus in Columbia, but I'm more concerned about Russian disinformation playing a role and, quite frankly, Steve Bannon's Gamergate trolls. What's your level of concern about that?
So let me see if I understand, Andy. You're saying it's conceivable that we will see protests at both or the Dem convention this summer?
Yes.
Are you saying at both conventions or just the Democratic convention?
Oh, no, the Democratic convention.
At the Democratic convention. Okay. That will be reminiscent of 1968 Vietnam War protests. But your concern is that they may not be completely grassroots, that they may be astroturfed either by outside influence, people like Steve Bannon or Russia.
Exactly.
So listen, here's the deal. What I am not going to do here is suggest that a bulk of the current protests that we are seeing are astroturfed or not what they claim to be. I think the vast majority of the protesters we've been seeing are genuine in their beliefs to the extent that they have a clue what's going on. And we've seen dozens of videos of people who are asked, what are you, why here? Why at NYU? And they go, I don't know. Why are we at NYU? Something about Free Palestine. So listen, number one, there are people who just don't have a clue what's going on. There are people who, when you actually ask them what are your demands, they either don't have any or they're completely unreasonable. Like, for example, full divestment before we leave. And it's like it takes years for institutions like these to make moves with their endowment. So the best you could maybe hope to secure is them saying, we will reconsider certain investments. So you've got that. You have people who seem very confused about what is even constituting peaceful protests. Like, is it peaceful when you block certain people from doing things? Is it peaceful to sing songs about we love Hamas rockets or stuff like that? But the top level, if you're using speech and when you start blocking access or putting up tents, that may violate university rules, but you have to be allowed to speak. I think it's despicable to say we love Hamas rockets, but it seems to be that if that's all you're doing, it's just speech and it must be allowed, etc. Now, are there a lot of people that are being arrested who don't have student IDs at the respective universities and might be agitators? Yeah, they might be. But also, who says that if you go to Columbia and you're at NYU protesting, that you're not genuine in your beliefs just because you don't have an NYU ID? You hear what I'm saying, Andy?
I do. And I don't mean to discount the deeply held and truly felt beliefs that I'm sure are out there.
Yep.
I'm more concerned about outside influences like the Bannons and Russians as opposed to these anarchists.
Right. So I'm building to that. So here's the bottom line. I am concerned about that. And I want to the reason I gave that whole spiel at the beginning is the fact that Russia and Bannon would have an interest in generating violence and property destruction and all those things shouldn't diminish that the vast majority of the protesters are genuine in their beliefs, as naive or uninformed as they might be. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's my sense. And obviously, I'm against violence of any kind. I'm against this sort of provocateurism. And I don't know to what extent there may be protests. I mean, listen, here, I think there's going to be quite a security perimeter around the DNC. And so there well may be some protests. I think they're going to be pretty far from the action. And we will see what level of media coverage they get.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, David.
All right. Andy from Berkeley, California. Great to hear from you. Let's go to Pam from Florida. Pam from Florida, welcome back to the program. What's on your mind today? What's going on?
Hi. Well, I just wanted to make a quick comment to the listeners, especially in Florida, that today is the start of the 6-week abortion ban. Just to anybody who is voting or cares to protect women's rights, there'll be a ballot initiative. We're reminding everyone coming up in November to put back the constitutional right for women to choose, because 6 weeks is pretty much in effect, a total abortion ban.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know a couple of people right now who, when they found out they were pregnant, because it's based on, correct me if I'm wrong, Pam, I don't pretend to be an expert in this, but I know a little something about it. I guess when you find out you're pregnant, you then are asked what was the first or last day of your previous period.
Right.
And very often that puts you at 6 weeks by the time you find out that you're pregnant.
Yes, more like 8. But yeah, absolutely. You don't know you're pregnant at 6 weeks for the most part. You don't not necessarily even feeling anything to test have missed for any length of time. So, and then again, there's no real exceptions other than life threatening. So it's pretty dark. And also just very quick note, there is a wonderful person running to unseat Senator Rick Scott. So look for Debbie Mercosul, because she is running on the
former congresswoman. She's been a guest on this program, a very nice person.
And all, because we all know he is way in favor of that ban, and also he wanted to get rid of Social Security and all that. So he's not good for us Floridians.
Very much not. Well, listen, Pam, I should be down in Florida soon, appearing on a number of different programs and podcasts. It should be a very, very interesting situation. So I hope all is well down there.
He's in Miami. You come up to West Palm or the Palm Beach area ever?
You know, I did go up to, I think it's called, is it Royal Palm Beach or something like that?
Yeah, that's a little bit north. Yep.
Yeah, I have a couple friends up there. It's quite a scene, I have to tell you.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm in East Lake Worth, which is pretty Democratic, so it's a friendly environment. But really, one quick thing. Has the Palestinian protests changed or shifted your concern as far as the people sitting out because they're mad at Biden? Has it increased or shifted that concern because of these protests that are making, like you said, people who are ill-informed feel a certain way?
It really hasn't. I mean, I'm still going by the polling, and the polling has this as like the 10th or 15th most important issue for voters overall. So I think everything matters, but I don't know that this is an election shifting situation.
Right. Okay. Because, you see the things people write, and you just want to cringe because, hey, you're going to go against your all the groups you're supposedly for. But anyway, so to all my fellow peeps in Florida, if you know anybody, please get them out to vote, especially on that initiative. So,
All right. Pam from Florida, thank you so much
appreciate
for the call.
It.
Always great to hear from you. Let's go to Janelle. Janelle, welcome back to the program. Janelle has Janelle now in Baltimore. Okay, welcome, Janelle.
Yes, hi, David. Yes, I've moved to Baltimore.
Congratulations.
I saw you were talking. First, I just have to say solidarity to Pam in Florida. She's doing everything that she could do there, it sounds like. And I'm doing everything that I can do from Baltimore to help as much as I can.
Excellent.
I've been doing as much as I can here, too. And I just want to say solidarity and bless you, Pam.
Good.
Anyway, my question, it really has to do with the taxes that you were talking about. And I just wanted to point out that moving from Texas, a red state, moving to Maryland, a blue state, there is a very, very big difference in property taxes. And I noticed that, obviously, when I moved here. And so my question is this like a way that they're trying to maybe encourage people to move to red states or something?
Well, red states in general have always had this attitude of, hey, come here for less regulation and lower taxation. We don't have a state income tax. You know, very famously, New Hampshire and Florida and Texas talk about how they have no state income tax. I don't think it's a new thing, but it's often been floated as a free yourself of oppressive regulation and state income tax by coming to these states. Now, oftentimes there's very little infrastructure. The public schools are terrible. In Texas, you know, they have this isolated power grid that causes all sorts of havoc. Sometimes you may have no income tax, but property taxes are very high. For example, some people move from New York City across the river to Jersey. I know a couple of people who recently did this and they said, my property taxes are through the roof. I no longer pay the city income tax nor the state income tax, but my property taxes are crazy. And now I'm commuting to Manhattan. So, you know, it's not a new thing that this conversation's happening. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. excuse me. Anyway, I just wanted to tell everybody back in Texas that the blue states are not these criminally insane places full of criminals. Okay, it's really cool out here. You know, there's beautiful places and the people are super friendly and you don't feel like you might be confronted by a really heavy right winger right to your face that like in Texas might be carrying a loaded weapon. You know, so you feel a lot less intimidated out here in blue states.
Well, Janelle from Baltimore, sounds like you're enjoying it. I appreciate the call.
Okay, thank you, David.
All right, there goes Janelle. Let's go next to Oli from Dallas, Texas. Oli, welcome to the program. Thank you for your website membership.
Yeah, no problem. And thank you for everything that, you know, you're doing to, you know, keep us, you know, woke and aware of, you know, what's at stake, especially for the 2024 election. And also, I didn't get the chance to say this, but, and I know it's been like 2 years, I believe, but congratulations on the birth of your daughter.
Thank you.
So, no problem. So my question is, and you might have answered this question in regards to AI in the past, but I'm curious if that's okay. So getting to the question, sorry about being long-winded.
You're doing great.
Awesome. What role do you think emerging technologies like AI and social media will play in the 2024 election, the presidential election? And also, how might they influence voter behavior compared to previous elections? I know this might be a loaded question, but
Well,
I'm
I think it
curious
still
to get your
remains to be
opinion.
seen, but it's already having some effect. I mean, listen, at a very like banal vanilla level, you can already use ChatGPT to probe about any political issue that is of importance to you. So already the biases and inputs of these large language models can have an impact based on the feedback you get when you go to ChatGPT and you say, "Hey, I want to understand the history and the two sides of the debate around taxation and what taxes should be," or whatever the case may be. So in some nominal way, it's already having an impact. Now, there are technologies that are less arguably neutral, although what I said just now isn't that neutral, but there are less neutral things like we saw in New Hampshire, the fake robocall with the deep fake Joe Biden voice calling people up and telling them something untrue about the election, for example. This is accelerating so quickly. The quality of a lot of these outputs is accelerating so quickly that, I mean, listen, by November to some degree, and certainly by the midterms of 2026, we are going to really be up against some difficult to discern deep fakes and fabricated sort of synthetic content, I th think is the right way to say it. I think the cat is out of the bag in terms of, I think anybody wasting time on trying to shut this down or limit it, the cat is out of the bag. And the reality is, there are so many potentially positive uses in medicine, in research, in so many different areas. I just don't think we should waste any more time on how can we ban or stop this. It's out of the bag, and there's a lot of good things that will come with it. What we have to do is what we do with every technology, which is we ask, what sorts of safeguards can be put in place? What regulation could be put in place, et cetera? And so I am very concerned as far as, you know, the highs are high and the lows are very low. I'm very concerned. I think it will have an impact to some degree on the forthcoming election. The exact ways it, in the exact details of which I think are not totally clear yet.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, I love AI. I work in like data analytics and data engineering, so I use it a great deal. But yeah, just like AI and like its influence on, you know, this election, especially given, you know, the past elections. I mean, with 2016, with Russia interfering in our election, with the troll farms, AI, like it seems like, you know, to me it's kind of like a reasonable concern. But anyways, thanks for taking my call, and I hope you have a great rest of the day, man.
All right, Oli from Dallas, Texas. Great to hear from you. Let's go to Genio. Welcome, Genio, from Chester Springs, Pennsylvania. Let's keep the uninterrupted streak of successful phone calls from a technical standpoint going. Welcome, Genio.
Hi, David. How are you doing?
Doing well, thank you.
Great, great. Thanks for calling on me.
Of course.
Well, first off, I wanted to know, did you have any input into Howard Stern doing the interview with Biden when you
none
were
whatsoever. And you know what?
none?
I've been notified that he talked about my commentary about the interview. I haven't been able to hear it yet, but I want to hear it.
He did. Did Howard talk about David's commentary? My husband listens
I
every
didn't
day.
hear.
I've heard it's been pretty good. My question to you is, what do you think about, I've read a few articles about people wanting Justice Kagan to step down voluntarily in order for Biden to put a younger, left-leaning judge into the Supreme Court. What are your thoughts on that?
Justice Kagan's 64 years old. I don't know why. I mean, does that make sense? Is she? I mean, I have to have the all of the ages in front of me, but I don't really understand why you would say force a 64-year-old down. I don't know.
Well, I don't know the if it was New York Times, I forget the where I read the article, but they were saying yes, she is relatively young, but in the grand scheme of things, like if she's had health problems in the past, and that it would just it would just give the Democrats a little bit of an edge to just have someone young like the other justices that Trump put in. So, let's see, you haven't heard about that? I'm taking a look.
I mean, so Kagan, 64. Listen, this is the first I'm hearing of it. I'd need to know more about it, but I haven't heard it, to be honest.
Oh, okay. I didn't think it was a horrible idea, although, you know, obviously you wouldn't want someone to stop working earlier than they have to, but
yeah,
maybe for the good of the country. Mm. Well, that was my questions for today. Thank you so much. Thank you for all that you do. We love listening to you. We're big fans.
Thank you so much. All right. There goes Jenny O from Pennsylvania. Let's take a super quick break. We'll take some more calls in a moment. So if you're hanging on to talk to me, don't hang up just yet. All right, let's go back to Discord at davidpakman.com/discord and hear from a few more people. Let's go to Isaac from Indianapolis. Isaac from Indianapolis, welcome to the program. What is on your mind today?
Hey, David, can you hear me well?
Yes, I can.
Hey, I wanted to just start off by saying that I really enjoyed that interview with the congressperson. I believe it was just a couple weeks ago, I believe you speak with the congressman, but my question was, why don't you do that more often?
I'll be honest with you. It takes forever to schedule. Are you talking about my interview with Richie Torres?
Yes, sorry.
It was rescheduled 5 times. And so the reason that we don't do more of it is, it is so difficult with all of the different staffers justifying their job existence by constantly saying, we got to do this, we got to push it here, there, the other. You spend so much time getting it done. And then honestly, most of the audience doesn't really care for it. They find a lot of the things that members of Congress say sort of formulaic and bland. I think Jamie Raskin was an exception. Eric Swalwell, I think, did well. And I thought the interview with Richie Torres was great, but not a lot of people like it, and it's so much work to schedule that's honestly the reason why we don't do more of it.
Okay. And I also just wanted to say that I do enjoy when you get into the nitty gritty of the policies and get into those details that I don't fully understand because I'm still fairly new into politics. And
oh, good. Well, we'll do more of it.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate it. There is Isaac from Indianapolis. Why don't we go next? Oh, I don't know. How about Tyler from Long Island? Tyler from Long Island, welcome. Are you from Mid Island or are you way out there in the Hamptons or closer to the city?
No. I'm in. Can you hear me, David?
I can hear you fine.
All right. Yeah, no, I'm Nassau County, you know.
Okay.
Kind of close to Queens, not too far.
Beautiful.
Not too deep.
Gotcha.
Two really quick questions, just real quick. Love the show.
Thank
website member.
Appreciate it.
Love the new website. That was awesome.
Excellent.
Two questions really quick.
Yeah.
One, what makes you choose the background that you choose?
Oh, you mean in the studio?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh. Like I've noticed you've gone back and forth.
Yeah. Depending on what's going on, I'm taping in one place or the other, depending on what other stuff I have to film that day. So it's more just dictated by my schedule.
Okay. Gotcha. Two, can you watch the bonus show on YouTube?
Yes.
How do I get that go?
You log into the website, you go to member content. You pick the date of the show you want. And then when you see the little box that says bonus show, when you click it, it'll pop open another tab or browser window, or on your mobile phone, it will go directly into the YouTube app. And then there is the bonus show.
Oh, all right. Amazing. And then if I just can, just one last question.
Of course.
So this one's a little bit more serious. So I love your coverage on President Biden. I think, you know, it's definitely opened my eyes to that, you know, like he's definitely, you know, not a bad president whatsoever.
Mm.
But to my knowledge, little to or nothing really changed when President Biden took over immigration wise. Am I wrong or right?
Listen, there are ebbs and flows seasonally and for different reasons with regard to immigration. Biden did do away with Title 42 and then started a program to reunite families separated at the border. There have been some changes around the edges, but there's not been an overhaul of immigration, certainly.
Are we still, you know, quote unquote, keeping children in cages?
Well, I think we are slowly getting them out of the cages, for lack of a better term, okay. As crazy as that is. I think that the point is they've reunited some, but not all of the families.
All right, David, thank you so much.
All right, Tyler from Long Island. Great to hear from you. Very much appreciate it. Let's go to Lewis from Florida. Lewis from Florida, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today? What are you thinking about?
David, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hey, how's it going? I was wondering if you heard about what was going on at the University of Florida with the protests.
No, what happened?
So they tried setting up the encampments, right, that they've been doing in New York City and all over the country.
Yep.
And the administration had warned them against it, saying that setting up the encampments was against the rules of the university.
Mm-hmm.
So when they tried setting up the encampment around 11:30 at night, they got the police there and told them that if they didn't leave, they would be trespassed from campus for 3 years and suspended.
Okay.
So after this happened, there was a lot of outcry, as you might imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And the university put out a statement from the spokesman. And that statement was, "This is not complicated. The University of Florida is not a daycare, and we do not treat protesters like children. They knew the rules, they broke the rules, and they'll face the consequences."
Right.
So I was just wondering what you thought of that, of the way they treated the protesters.
So I'm going just by what you are saying. So ultimately, did they arrest everybody?
Sorry, David?
Did they ultimately end up arresting everybody?
They arrested quite a few of them.
Oh,
I think it was maybe like around a dozen.
Listen, here's my view in general. We have a right to free speech. And to the extent that the protests don't violate specific campus rules, the protesters should be allowed to protest. That's my view. I disagree with the vast majority of them. Right. When you ask them their views on the specifics and you say, well, from which river to what sea should it be Palestine? Their answer, if they have one, I disagree with. Like, I think Israel gets to exist. I think it's a country. I don't think saying there should be, but they have the right to do it. Now, every single time that there are protests and then there is an overly authoritarian blowback and reaction from universities, city police departments, elected officials, it always backfires. It always comes off as going way, way, way overboard. I saw video of like people from the press, like a photographer being knocked down by police and all these crazy things. So that I am against. Now, I have to tell you, I'm not doing a both sides here thing here, Lewis. Like, again, they have a right to be heard in terms of their voices. But I saw examples like where protesters at Columbia took over a building. They occupied a building, which already violates university rules. And then they were saying that if they aren't brought food and drinks, or if food and drinks are blocked, which I saw no evidence was going on, that it is considered blocking humanitarian aid, almost like, I mean, that. So that to me seems kind of wacky. They have an absolute right to be heard to the extent that their speech is completely legal and protected. And then sometimes they're going into like really wacky stuff where it's like, what do you think is going to happen? Now, as far as the University of Florida, I didn't know what was going on there. And so it's hard to comment more specifically than that.
Yeah. So I was really just curious what you thought about the daycare comment. Cause like you said, I also agree with you that obviously they have the right to speak. They have the right to hold signs.
Yep.
It's just that they were forewarned, you know, about setting up an encampment.
Yeah. Listen, most of the schools have rules that the protests cannot involve anything even semi-permanent. Now we could say, oh, that's wrong. But those are the rules at most schools. Once you bring tents and stake them into the ground, it's a semi-permanent encampment. Now, maybe the demands of the students could include change the rules about what's allowed, or I don't know. But if the school says these are the rules and they tell them ahead of time, it's sort of like it's not shocking that they're going to take actions to prevent the encampment from starting. I don't support stuff like, you know, fire hoses against protesters. I don't support any of that stuff. But you also, it's like any logical person is going to realize they have these rules and they're warning us about them. This probably isn't going to be allowed.
Right. Yeah. And I have to say, I was definitely on board with the university's response. Like I said, they were completely warned of what would happen. And did so anyway, as far as the daycare comment goes, I feel like that kind of rings true with like the Columbia example you brought up, where like, it seems like they kind of just coddle the students and kind of give in to their demands of like, you know, no police presence. And then we see what happens when universities give in to those demands. They take over the, you know, they take over the building. So,
I think it takes on a different environment when it's political speech rather than like, let me give you an example. I did undergrad at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst, Massachusetts. And during the time that I was there, there were some close calls where the Boston Red Sox got close-ish to a World Series. And then there was also like, actually, they won the World Series in 2004. And a lot of the same, functionally speaking, things happened that are happening at some of these campuses now. Now, to be clear, it had nothing to do with Palestine or Israel. It was about sports, okay? But when the behavior became semi-permanent type stuff, not necessarily tense, but kind of like setting stuff up, large crowds of people blocking access to certain buildings. I remember there was somebody who got up onto a roof of a dining hall and jumped down and broke both his ankles. I guess he was drunk and just did something very stupid. The police horses came out. People were suspended. They cleared the space eventually. And it's like, obviously, that's going to happen. I'm not saying it's the same thing to go out when the Red Sox win or lose because you're angry or happy than to protest perceived injustices. But my point is, the speech part is completely, absolutely something you can do. And then also when you start violating the rules of assembly, the police horses came out and it's like, I don't know, was it wrong when they did that back in 2004 at UMass? I don't know. You know, I'm not sure. It was predictable. That's what I can tell you.
Yeah, and I just think the response was good because it was effective. I mean, the encampment, the students, they packed up and left right after that. And you know what? The next day, they came back in the morning holding signs, no permanent structures or anything. Mm. And then they went home at the end of the day. And I think that's just how it should be. And if the administration needs to do something to keep them in check, like tell them the rules and that they'll be trespassed from campus and suspended if they break them. Like, you know, I just don't understand why they can't do that at these other schools.
Yeah, I'm not sure. And I have not been following each response as closely as maybe you have, Lewis, but I really do appreciate you calling in about it.
Yep. Thank you.
All right. Lewis from Florida. There he goes. That will do it for calls today. But I'll take calls again. Don't worry. Next week is as good a time as any. So we'll take a very quick break and be back right after this. Let's get into Friday feedback for the week. If you have something to say that you'd like to have read on the show, have me respond to it. You can email info@davidpakman.com. Sometimes we'll also highlight and react to a Reddit post or a Twitter reply, a YouTube comment. But info@davidpakman.com is officially the place to submit feedback. We start with a comment from YouTube from Mr. Benchpress, who says, "Get over it, Democrats. He's winning. You're losing." And to every single one of these people, I say, what do you know that nobody else does? What do you know about an election that is likely to come down to under 500,000 votes in fewer than 5 states that you can be so sure that Joe Biden is going to lose? Now, Joe Biden may lose, and this is going to be the classic case of resulting. Millions of people have predictions about November's election, and some of them are going to be right because it's only 2 possible outcomes. It's sort of like when people say, "Oh, I'm pregnant." "Oh, really? I just have a feeling it's a boy. I have a feeling it's a girl." There's only 2 options here. And those who end up being right think that it was through some kind of insight or feeling or whatever the case may be. It's 50-50. And this will likely be very close. And it will come down to the margins. Who chooses to show up in November? What last minute thing happens that encourages or dissuades just small numbers of voters? So to the confident, "Get over it, Democrats, he's winning, you're losing." If you're so confident that Biden is winning and he's winning by a lot, put your money where your mouth is by staying home and arguing that it's just not even going to be close. They don't need your vote. Trump doesn't need your vote. I don't have that level of confidence. Either one of these candidates could win. And so you better be damn sure that I am going to be voting. Inagada Davida on Reddit says, today, Pacman referred to himself as a minority. I get that he's Hispanic and Jewish. However, these are ethnicities. Jewish people are considered an ethno-religious group. With all respect to David, he's a white guy, hardly a minority. Just my two cents. This is unfortunately a very simplistic and kind of pedestrian view of a lot of these issues. So first of all, when you say these are ethnicities, right? Yeah, they are minority ethnicities. Therefore, I'm a minority. Denying Jews minority status or claiming that they are actually different, both are used by different flavors of anti-Semites historically to go after Jews. The Nazis would say, no, the Jews are different. A drop of Jewish blood makes you Jewish, and they aren't white, and it's its own race and blah, 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 blah. And that was the basis for discrimination, and more than discrimination, the attempt to exterminate Jews. On the other hand, we have those who say we don't need to worry about religious discrimination against Jews. We don't need to worry about non-religious discrimination against Jews. Remember, most discrimination against Jews in the United States is not religious. It's not, oh, you're bad because of what the Bible says. It's you're bad because of insert generic anti-Semitic trope here. And so now denying minority status to Jews is used to say we don't need to worry about discrimination against Jews. You're all just white people. Now, from an ethno-religious perspective, we know that Jews aren't white because there is specific genetic screening that is done for would-be Jewish parents and Jewish mothers because of certain conditions that affect Jews differently than so-called white people. Now, I would love white to be defined further, right? Because there was a period where Italians weren't white, now they are. And there was a period where Irish weren't white, and now they are. Okay. So what this person at the end of the day means is that Jews are white passing, to which I say, yes, some Jews are white passing, and close to half are not, and probably would be on visual inspection, for lack of a better term, assumed to be Arab. So I'm kind of sick of this topic. And the people writing in saying, David, you're just a white guy. Tell me what you're really trying to communicate to me when you say that. And I think what most people mean is you are white passing because you learned to speak English without an accent and you have a certain physical appearance. Okay, that's a more serious conversation we can have. Detroit Zero on the subreddit says, why is no one talking about Trump sundowning? The man is clearly struggling to speak. He's slurring. He can't pronounce some words properly. This would not be concerning if he doesn't obviously try to cover it up right after his mistake. He tries really hard to pretend he just didn't say that and has a slightly concerned look on his face right after he realizes what he said. Yeah, that's exactly what he does. He also does a certain like a physical thing. It's been happening more and more recently. Are we really going to give the keys to the presidency to someone who's clearly showing concerning symptoms? It's only going to get worse. Yeah, well, this is exactly what Doctors Harry Siegel and John Gartner has said. Trump seems to do better early in the day. Maybe that's why he had a 6 a.m. rally last week. I don't know. It seems to get worse later in the day. In general, month to month, it seems to be getting worse. I don't know where he's going to be come July or come September or come November. I don't know. It's hard to imagine that he's going to be doing better than he's doing right now. Crummy Nubs wrote on the subreddit. By the way, you can find our subreddit at davidpacman.com/reddit. I should actually make sure that that works. Some of the redirects collapsed when the website went live. It does work. Beautiful. Okay. A keen response to people holding their nose at voting for Biden. I won't vote for Biden. All right. Well, since you want your voice to be heard and choosing president is just one of dozens of choices you'll be making in November, which local candidates and initiatives are you supporting? This will help open a dialogue about what can be done at the local level. Also stops the genocide Joers in their tracks. Yeah, listen, I mean, even if you plan to abstain voting for president, I hope that you're going to go out and vote for members of Congress, senators, if any are up for re-election in your state, local office. There are mayors and state senators and state reps. This is a good point. And I don't know that it'll get anyone who's determined not to vote Biden to vote Biden. But I hope when you say you might not vote, you're only talking about Biden, right? You're still going to go out and do your civic duty when it comes to down ballot races. I hope I'm not misinterpreting that. Larry Brown wrote on YouTube, David, you are delusional. Like the media hates Trump, he's right. He needs an unbiased, honest commentary. If he debates, one debate he wouldn't want to have would be on your show. I don't know what Larry Brown is talking about. If you're saying Trump wouldn't appear on this show. Yeah, I mean, you're almost certainly right. He's welcome anytime. I don't know what Larry is saying. I'm delusional. Maybe Larry is saying that for Trump to debate, he needs an unbiased moderator. Is that what he's saying? Man, I don't know what these people are talking about. And I just don't know. And I don't know if it's a sign of the educational system that the grammar is so bad. I just don't know. Sunshine wrote on the subreddit, Sleepy Trump. Anyone else think Trump's sleepiness in court may not just be from old age and nightly truth social rage fests, but actually a deliberate sedation to keep him from having a full blown tantrum? I mean, don't get me wrong. The root is old AF, out of shape, operating off a steady diet of McDonald's and BS. So it's very possible he requires at least one daily nap to function. But I don't know, for that to happen during the trial at all, and especially in the first couple days, definitely seems like more than just old age stress and a busy schedule. I really think they might be purposely sedating him to avoid him having a meltdown. I mentioned this last week. I don't deny for a second that Trump's lawyers would have an interest in Trump being sedated so he doesn't lash out. The thing is, he's been lashing out. He'll fall asleep and then he'll wake up and he'll gesticulate and lash out at a potential juror, and then he'll go back to sleep. Then he comes out of court and he's all fired up. I think it would be very difficult to be feeding Trump uppers and downers so that they take effect at the exact moment that they want, especially without it being noticed in court. So I struggle to believe that that's what's going on. It's occurred to me. It's occurred to others. Julius says polls are never accurate, but Pac-Man loves to paddle and use it to fuel people. It's called paddling in hate. To which Brenda replied, perhaps you mean pedal and peddling. A paddle is used to propel a boat. And of course, Brenda's completely correct. Listen, polls are never accurate. I don't know that that's the case. You never want to look at just one poll. For example, there's a recent CNN poll that says Trump is winning by 9. I struggle to believe it, not because I don't want it to be true, but because no other poll says that. That poll says 23% of people are going to vote third party. No other poll says that. So last election, when it came to the popular vote, the polls were quite accurate. It's just that to be accurate nationally, Trump lost the popular vote by like 7, doesn't address that it came down to about 112,000 votes in 3 states. That's such a small margin that it's hard for polling to get that exactly right. On the topic of Trump sleeping, Maita says could be that Mr. Trump just checks out because he just wants the bad dream to go away. Doesn't want to listen or be there at all. He seems unable to accept what is happening. So when he is awake, this is his nightmare, but asleep he can avoid it. A sign of a mental disorder. To which Linda replied, or he's on the internet all night ranting. Yeah, it's funny. If Trump is just trying to avoid reality by sleeping through trial, you'd think he'd also be trying to stay off of Truth Central and stay off the internet. I don't know, but certainly an interesting possibility. All right. And lastly, here is Melinda on the topic of the term Hispanic and says Hispanic is confusing. I used to think it was another word for Latino until my Dominican neighbor pulled me aside one day to say he was offended I was categorizing him as Hispanic, because to him that meant Mexican, and he was offended being called a Mexican. Since that day, I usually say Spanish speaking to try not to offend anyone. However, recently I think I heard Hispanic does not mean Mexican. No, so listen. Spanish, we've talked about this a few times. Spanish speaking just means you speak Spanish. And so that definitely doesn't mean Hispanic or Latino. There is debate as to whether Hispanic and Latino mean the same thing or not. One interpretation is Latino refers to Central and South America only, whereas Hispanic also includes the European country of Spain. There are those who say Hispanic definitely doesn't only mean Mexican. That I've never heard before. But there are others who say Hispanic and Latino do have distinct definitions. Also, there is Latin American, which arguably includes all of the countries of Central and South America, even the ones that don't speak Spanish. There's debate about that. Certainly, Brazilians are not considered Hispanic anywhere I've seen, and they don't speak Spanish in Brazil. There is some debate over this, but Hispanic meaning Mexican is definitely not one that I have ever heard before. We have a great bonus show for you today. I would love it if you signed up at joinpacman.com. I do want to remind you, we believe about half of 1% of our audience supports us directly through forms of support that include membership. We are trying to get from half of 1% to 1%. If we can get to 1% financial support, we are completely insulated indefinitely from any financial calamities such as those we've experienced in the past. So the membership support is a really big deal. Consider signing up at joinpacman.com. You'll get instant access to the bonus show, which, by the way, if you're a member, you can listen to or watch right now.
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Techno Land? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
WRCT, the insane from way out.
there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet, because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Well, welcome, everybody. The honeymoon is over and there is trouble in paradise. Donald Trump apparently already hates his new criminal lawyer and is reportedly furious with him, wondering aloud, why am I paying so much for this legal defense? This is, of course, relating to Trump's first of four criminal trials. This is all about Todd Blanche, Trump's criminal defense attorney. The New York Times has a very good article on this from a couple days ago. Trump venting about lawyer in his criminal trial seeks more aggression. Todd Blanche upended his career to represent Trump and has been the former president's favorite. But Mr. Trump has made him a focus of his episodic rash. We'll link to the article. But the number of things that Trump is displeased with is growing very quickly. Number one, behind closed doors and in phone calls, Trump.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
If you're watching this pre-recorded report, then Al Jazeera has been banned in the territory of Israel.
As the death toll in Gaza approaches 35,000, Israeli authorities take Al Jazeera off the air in Israel and order Palestinians in eastern Rafah to evacuate ahead of an Israeli offensive. We'll go to Doha to speak with Al Jazeera's managing editor, Mohammed Mourwan. And as the World Food Program warns, northern Gaza is experiencing full-blown famine. We'll get an update from Dr. Walid Wasoud of the Palestine Children's Relief Fund in Amman. He's just returned from a medical mission in Gaza. Then graduation ceremonies begin on college campuses across the United States as students continue their protests calling for their schools to divest from Israel.
I apologize that this is not a typical graduation speech, but there is nothing typical about the times that we are living in. There is nothing typical about 15,000 children live-streamed deaths being watched. And there is nothing acceptable about our institutional complicity, silence, or the gross misuse of police force nationwide.
We'll speak with a senior who is part of the graduation protest at the University of Michigan, and we'll go to the University of Virginia in Charlottesville. In 2017, neo-Nazis chanted, "Jews will not replace us there." We'll speak with a UVA student arrested Saturday after police in riot gear stormed a Gaza Solidarity encampment. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's ordered 100,000 Palestinians living in eastern Rafah to evacuate ahead of an Israeli offensive on the southern Gaza city, where more than 1.4 million displaced Palestinians have sought refuge. The UN aid agency, UNRWA, warned Israel's attack on Rafah would have devastating consequences and lead to more civilian suffering and deaths. Overnight, Israeli bombardments killed at least 26 people in Rafah, including 11 children.
We fled death and destruction, and we came to Rafah only to find destruction here. Do they want to kill us here? We came seeking safety in Rafah. Where do they want to send us? Where are we to go? The situation is so difficult. We're unable to describe the destruction that we are living in here. Someone feel for us and the tragedy we are living through.
The order to evacuate Rafah came a day after Hamas fighters fired rockets at the Karam Abu Salem crossing, killing four Israeli soldiers. This all comes as ceasefire talks appear to have stalled. On the humanitarian front, Cindy McCain, the widow of Senator John McCain, now the head of the World Food Program, told NBC that northern Gaza is in full-blown famine.
What I can explain to you is that there is famine, full-blown famine in the north, and it's moving its way south.
We'll speak to a doctor who just left Gaza about the full-blown famine. He's now in Amman. Protests continue on college campuses across the United States as students call on schools to divest from Israel. At the University of Michigan, students holding Palestinian flags briefly disrupted graduation ceremony Saturday as a plane flew overhead holding a banner that read, "Divest from Israel now, free Palestine." At Indiana University in Bloomington, some students walked out of Saturday's commencement and booed the school's president. Planes also circled above that ceremony carrying a banner with a Palestinian flag and the words, "Let Gaza live." At the University of Virginia in Charlottesville, police arrested 25 protesters who'd set up a Gaza solidarity encampment. In Chicago,